Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson.
We are in a very warm booth.
It is. Somehow they cordon off the studio from the air conditioning because they don't want the sound.
Because you don't want the sound. And I'm just like, surely there's a way to make this room colder. Like, I don't know. I feel like we need like a couple of buckets of ice or something.
Maybe. Yeah, it does feel like, you know, we have to record in a sauna.
But we are suffering for the sake of the people.
for good pod.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a beef.
Okay.
And it involves a food service establishment.
as it always does.
Well, on the drive in this morning, it's not really even a beef. I'm very confused by it. This morning, I stopped by Starbucks to get a coffee.
Which I'm not currently seeing.
Right. And the reason that you're not seeing it is because they said, our espresso machine is still not working. I didn't know that it wasn't working previously because I haven't been by there in a little bit. But this is the one thing that you
kind of need.
You need to have this. It's like a hamburger place running out of hamburgers or something. Mm. So, I'm not super like mad about it or anything, but it was just kind of disappointing to go to a coffee place and they don't have coffee.
Hot chocolate?
No. Well, I asked, what can you make? I wanted a decaf latte. And this is the other reason why it's not that a huge a deal, because I drink decaf. So it's not like I need this to get through my morning or whatever. I'm beyond that. But it's just nice to have a coffee. I like the taste of coffee. And she kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? work with me here. So the espresso machine goes down. Why are you like, you can't do business? I guess they could sell their sandwiches and things like that. But it was just disappointing. You know, I was like really looking forward to that little coffee treat and they didn't have it.
Talking about food establishments and beefs. One of the things that I really struggle with is when you go to specifically fast food restaurants and you get a burger and they ask like, do you want that plain? I don't really know how to respond to that because
I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that.
Oh, yeah.
They ask you, do you want it plain?
Do you want it plain? Or I'll say things like, can I just have it with just cheese?
Oh.
And they'll say, do you want that plain? And here's my reason why I don't know what to say to that. What I want is, this is just really bad podcasting. What I want is the roll, the bun, the burger, and the cheese.
Plain.
Well, is it? Because you're adding cheese to it.
Oh, that's a cheeseburger plain.
Yeah. So when they say, do you want it plain? I'm going, I want cheese
on there.
So do I want it plain or do I want it with cheese? So this is my life conundrum because I don't want any other stuff on it.
Trying to learn the different lingo in different places. So and it took me a long time in New England to figure out that when I would order an iced coffee and I would order it black, that meant that it would come sweetened. And I would assume black is like, there's nothing in it.
Yeah.
That just means there's no cream or there's no dairy in it. I had to say plain. The word is plain if you don't want anything in it at all.
Wow. Okay.
And so I kept getting this coffee and I'd be like, oh, what is this? It's got like, 10 tablespoons of sugar in here. And I was like, oh, you didn't want that sweetened? Yeah. I was like, no, I wanted it black. And they're like, well, it is black. I'm like, no.
No.
In my mind, black meant you don't add anything to it, just the coffee.
Do you know what a Juicy Lucy is in terms of burgers?
No idea.
So a Juicy Lucy, we got this when we were up in Minneapolis. One of our friends got a Juicy Lucy burger, which is a ton of cheese in the middle of the burger. So the burger patty is around it. So you bite into it and all the cheese kind of goes out. It's like molten cheese. And they were saying, we should all get some Juicy Lucy's. And I was like, here's my biggest issue. And again, your issues is like coffee orders. My issues is burger orders. Number one, I want it plain, which means I want just the cheese.
Yeah.
And number two, I am not saying the phrase, can I have a Juicy Lucy at a burger, please?
Like, can I have that burger with the cheese in the middle of it?
Yeah, the cheese in the middle. Well, the Juicy Lucy. Sure.
It's like, you ever go to IHOP? They have the Rudy Tootie Fresh and Fruity.
Yes.
I would just point it. If I wanted it, I would just point at it. I'm not saying this out loud to a grown person.
Well, I'm a bit like that in Mexican restaurants. You know when, like, I've been to Mexican places with you and you, like, rhyme off the words and I'm like, I'll go for the La Just that one.
Number. That's why they do it. A lot of them do numbers.
I'll do the number 22. Number 22, and they say something like they'll say like four words in Spanish, and you're going, yes, that one. Yes. And I'm just thinking, man, I look so stupid when I say this. When I go out with my mother and she'll go to restaurants, she always likes to try say the words. And it's just like her Glaswegian accent comes out the strongest. I'll have the la tacos ochizo.
Well, that's already incorrect. Yeah, la tacos, but yeah. Anyway. You'd say los, I think.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, you can match the, anyway. The Spanish pronouns and everything are
what a great podcast this is.
They're matched to the gender of the word. There's no transition for this. I was thinking, how do I connect tacos
from the
know what pastors love as much as tacos?
Books. Yes.
You mentioned that the traffic on book episodes is pretty big.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I kind of sometimes feel like these are kind of cheating episodes. Mm. Like, let's just talk about some books for a little while. But people want to hear about books.
They still talk about going to conferences
and getting books and loving books. And so we're going to talk about the best books for pastors.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do like a top 10. I think we've done things like that before. Top 10 whatever books for this person or that person or most influential books. Yeah. But this is just, hey, what should pastors have? What would be good for pastors to have and read? And so I made a little list. I'm sure you made a little list.
Yeah, I actually brought them with me. I brought four with me because I think we have done one episode of like 10 books a pastor should have on his shelf or something like that.
Oh, we did. Okay.
So I've kind of gone away from kind of commentaries and study and things like that. And I've picked up some books that I just have read recently and I think pastors should read.
I went more towards commentaries and things.
Oh, wonderful.
But that's okay. I don't think I did that the last time. I probably did individual.
Yeah.
Type books.
So do you want to go?
I'll go first. I'll start with commentaries. And I just was thinking which sets in particular. Mm-hmm. So not individual commentaries. They're all, they're hit or miss. Depends on the author. Depends on the book, et cetera. So I thought like what sets have been really helpful to me over the last number of years of ministry that I've used more often. And I think I've said this on here before, but John Calvin's commentaries.
Yes.
Have been the most useful to me. It's rare. If he has a commentary on a particular book, I'm looking at it if that's what I'm preaching through. It's been that reliable. And obviously, I don't agree with Calvin on every little thing. But just for reliable exegesis that has stood the test of time, it's rare for me to read his take on a passage and then read a modern scholar, evangelical scholar, and the take be radically different, it holds up. Mm. And he's a good writer. That's the other thing that I like about it as well. I'm sure the English translation matters, but he just writes with a, I don't know, ecstatic or artful sort of style. So Calvin's commentaries, you can get like the whole set from some publishers. For not a whole lot of money because it's in the public domain and et cetera. The other set that I have found, I don't have the whole set, but I typically look for this volume if I'm preaching through a particular book, is the Pillar Commentary series. I don't know if you've seen those. I just have really enjoyed the Pillar Commentary series. And in particular, I think it's Douglas Moo who writes in the – no, it's not Moo – who writes in the Roman series. Well, skip that. Whoever wrote the Romans one in Pillar is great. But D.A. Carson's entry on the Gospel of John, I think I have used that, probably 20-something times over the last several years. And it's just a classic commentary. But the Pillar series is just one I keep going back to over and over again. And then Crossway, and I think this is fairly new, Crossway does this expository commentaries.
Yeah.
Where
they're
just
really
these
good.
Gigantic volumes, it's usually three or four books or two books in one volume, the big black hardback. Those have been really good. Not real in depth, but gospel-centered and just some good exposition in there.
I love those. The negative to them is because they're relatively new, they're also relatively expensive.
Okay.
They are a little bit more on the pricey end.
I know that I get it. They send them to me for free. So. Oh.
If you're listening, you can also send them to me for free. But yes, they are pretty expensive. Like you're looking $50 upwards for like
well,
each.
That's true of a lot of commentaries, though.
So why you buy secondhand? Like
yeah. So they're newer, you may not be able to find them used.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But if you got a book budget, Pastor, or someone's asking you, like, what commentaries should you be getting,
I
would recommend Calvin's Commentaries, the Pillar Commentary Series, and from Crossway, the Expository Commentary Series.
And this would be a good thing for things like Pastor Appreciation Month or just if your pastor's come up to you 5 years, 10 years, an anniversary or something like that, or he's going on sabbatical or something like that, or just as a church you want to bless him. These commentary series, they're tricky to collect and use because they are kind of pricey. So maybe pop into the pastor's office, have a look at his shelf and see if he needs his commentary sets kind of filled out a little bit. It will be a wonderful blessing to him, but also to you as he uses them.
Good.
There's my plug to buy some.
Yeah. What's my first
lectures to my students.
Oh, Charles I almost put that Spurgeon. On my list, but I didn't. Okay.
I absolutely loved it. So you can see my copies.
I'm going to cross it off.
Starting to get a little bit threadbare. I read lectures to my students both for just personal joy of learning from Spurgeon, but also I think he just has a bluntness that you are willing to accept. And I think a pastor sometimes needs a bluntness of reminders of how to behave and how to serve and what to concentrate on. And I'm actually just going to read a little excerpt because I really do love this little excerpt that I'm going to do. And this gives the tone of lectures to my students.
Which chapter is this on?
So this is on the choice of a text.
On the choice of a text.
And he says, "Beware of running about from this meeting to that, listening to mere twaddle and contributing your share to the general blowing up of windbags. A man great at tea drinkings, evening parties, and Sunday school excursions is generally little everywhere else. Your pulpit preparations are your first business, and if you neglect these, you'll bring no credit upon yourself or your office." And it's just like,
wow.
Just blowing up the windbags.
Yeah.
The reason I love it is for exactly that. He is so clear on the fundamentals of what ministry needs to be and also so clear in what the issues of the time were.
Yeah.
And I think even just that, I can imagine that was an issue of going and just talking. Well, what's one of the biggest issues that pastors face now? Getting involved in just the humdrum of every day and forgetting what they're meant to serve in. So if you have not read Lectures to My Students, I really recommend like taking a chapter at a time and just kind of mulling over it. If you have read it and it's been a while, go back and read it again. You probably need those reminders. Here's my just little tip. Maybe don't quote too much from it in your sermons because he is pretty blunt. He is pretty blunt. So yes. I love it. And I think if memory serves me right, in your pastoral class, you got us to read some of it. I don't think all of it.
No, but most of it, yeah. And it's a standard textbook in the introduction to pastoral ministry class. The minister's fainting fits is almost worth the whole cost of the book. But just the blind eye and deaf ear. I mean, there's just so much in there that is helpful in the minister's lifestyle. The chapters on preaching and those sorts of things. And technique and that sort of thing.
Yep.
But when he starts just talking about the pastoral heart and character and how to conduct yourself in the ministry life, it's just rare for folks today to talk about those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it's still really relevant. Yeah. That's on my list.
And it's
well.
Also because it's lectures to my students. He's he's schooling you on his experience and knowledge. And like, this is a book that you're being schooled on by Charles Spurgeon.
Yep.
There's a beauty in that.
So thinking again about sort of, at least at first for me, about sets or things that should be in the pastoral or in the pastor's personal library, and just thinking like, what's been super helpful to me over the last number of years, I'm going to mention 9 Marks of a Healthy Church by Mark Dever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the little series from 9 Marks, Building Healthy Churches.
Yeah, that's an excellent series.
I mean, they're so usable, shareable, distributable. They're colorful. We just find those things so easy to use as little manuals or like, hey, we want to get up to speed on deacons or, hey, we want to get up to speed on elders or, hey, let's talk about the gospel. The first book in our pastoral training center is Ray Ortland's book on the gospel in that little series. I've used in the ministry class before Jeremy Rennie's book on elders. There's just so much helpful stuff in that little series. And what's great is for the pastor, like just as a refresher, let me just take that little book off my shelf and you know, I can read a little bit. Oh, yeah, that's why we're doing this and that and the other thing. And this is why, you know, what we ought to aim for. But also, oh, I want to work with my deacons, or I want to work with my elders on a particular subject, or I want to have a small group or a class on this particular issue. You can get these little books, and they're just, I think it's great. It's just a great contribution to the church. Hey, everyone. We're excited to share a special opportunity this month to get your next summer book for free. During the month of July, Midwestern Seminary is giving away the entire Puritan paperback series to one lucky participant. The set contains 49 volumes from the Puritans, including titles such as The Bruised Reed by Richard Sibbes, The Mortification of Sin by John Owen, The Heart of Christ by Thomas Goodwin. Enter to win the set this July by visiting mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. That's mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. The Puritans have proved so formative for so many today, so don't miss out on your chance to get the entire set for free. Again, enter to win by visiting mbts.edu/mbtsbooks. Best of luck.
The role I'm taking on this summer is an interim senior pastor for a local church here in Kansas City. And actually through the summer, they're using Lehman's church membership book to kind of signify a deepening of their church membership. And they're going to take a little chunk every single week. So really excited about that, because I would say those books are in depth enough that you get something from them, but not so deep that the average church academic member that is not going to be able to grasp. Here's my thing. I'm collecting that series, but I've never paid full price for one of the books. I either grabbed them for free, or someone even from the seminary last night said, I've got this one, I'll sell for $5. I'm like, I'm in. So I'm slowly but surely getting my series.
Yeah, I mean, I've got multiple copies of each one for that reason. They just end up getting, you know, the church will get, hey, we got 100 copies of this. We're going to give away. And like, all right, I'll take one extra.
That's
one
the
of this.
Second time you've told me on this podcast you get given free books. And it's the second time I've thought you could in this moment, Jared, say, hey, if you have free books, send them Ross's way.
Okay. So if you have free books, send them Ross's way. You can send them care of Jared Wilson at Midwestern Seminary.
Yeah, sure. And do you know what's going to happen? They're going to send me all of your books. That's what's going to happen.
Hey, that would be bad. Yeah. You can sell them on eBay and then buy something you want.
Yeah. I'll get them signed and then sell them for more. On the Nine Marks train, my next recommendation is Word Center Church by Jonathan Lehman. I've actually read this, I think, 3 or 4 times. I've had it in different contexts. I've handed it to guys in terms of early into their ministry, especially guys that have gone into church planting. I think one of the temptations when you're serving in church is to make church about anything but the word. You know, we did an episode recently on baptism. We can even over concentrate on baptism, you know, and I think one of the things I love about Lehman's book on word-centered church, he's unapologetically saying that scripture needs to be right smack bang in the middle of your church. And just to kind of read two short quotes that I really love in it, explaining on why the Bible, he says, to read the Bible is not merely an exercise in intellectual comprehension. It's an opportunity to stand before the throne of the King of the universe. It's an opportunity to encounter him. God communes through communication. And I just love that, of saying to your church, you know, we're word-centered. Why? Because we're communicating with God. And then this other little quote that I love is, the pronouncement of God's word effectively draws a line in the sand between two groups of people, those who accept God's word and those who reject it. The work of the evangelist is to invite the people across that line. And I just love that sense of that we have God's word and that we're to put it out there so that people can know what God has said and either accept or reject. And that is their decision to do so. It's not a complicated book. You can read it in probably a couple of hours. You can quote from it really easily. And I would say this would be an excellent book for deacons, elders, ministry leads that are getting more involved in church, to remind them that it's not about the most effective practices or effective leadership, that is about God's word being taught, preached, displayed in people's lives, and honored and obeyed. So that's my big recommendation, Word-Centered Church by Jonathan Lehman.
Excellent. You know, thinking about the pastor's library and what pastors should have, pastors like books on preaching. So I picked 2 books on preaching that I think would be really beneficial for the pastor to consider, one ancient and one modern, or at least fairly modern. Ancient book, On the Apostolic Preaching by Irenaeus of Lyons, so early church father. I picked this book up not too long ago. It's in kind of the, I forget what the name of the series is, but it's a patristic series. Or
I don't know if I've
series.
Read that.
I picked it up thinking, oh, this is going to see or help me see how the apostles preached. But it's really what the apostles preached. And it's basically a really, stirring book of biblical theology. Irenaeus basically just goes from from Genesis to Revelation and says this is how the apostles preached Christ in the whole Bible. And it's not, a big book, but it's really itself almost like a Christ-centered exposition of the major storylines of the scriptures, which is helpful in a devotional sense, but also helpful to see the apostolic model for preaching was Christ-centered exposition. This isn't an innovation. This is ancient in and of itself. And so just for that double importance that it's good for you devotionally, but also just good historically and good hermeneutically to kind of see how the apostles preached. The modern book on preaching that I recommend is Tim Keller's book on preaching. And what you get, it's just called Preaching. What you get in Preaching by Tim Keller is really kind of a masterclass on the philosophy of gospel-centered preaching. There are, of course, some practical things in the books and some things on technique and those sorts of things. But in general, the book is sort of the philosophy of the gospel-centered hermeneutics, like what preaching is. Mm-hmm. And why preach Christ and preaching Christ to the heart and the preaching of Christ as an instinct and typology. And so it's just really helpful if you're trying to figure out, how do I preach every week in a way that I'm preaching, I'm preaching Jesus from the text, but it doesn't feel like an artifice or I'm trying to shove something in there. And I'm doing the same thing every week, so to speak, but it feels fresh and it feels new. Keller's book is really helpful in that regard. And even if you walk away not agreeing with everything in the book, you're still going to walk away with a sharpening and sort of a deepening, I think, of your understanding of what preaching is or ought to be in your church.
And that book's really accessible. I feel like he uses just enough words to explain what he's trying to get across and no more.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's a lot of fluff in there that he's trying to pad things out. So
good.
I really like that. Okay, my next recommendations, my next kind of couple are actually coming from the PTC, the Pastoral Training Center at Liberty that Jared runs there. This one was one that I'd never read until the PTC, and I would really recommend every single pastor to read it.
Okay.
Which is The Way of the Dragon or The Way of the Lamb. Mm. Really, this book, which is Goggin and Strobel, really what this book is doing is it's pitching two types of pastors. The pastor that is genteel, the pastor that is loving and caring and compassionate, really the pastor that is following in the footsteps of Christ, that is the way of the Lamb. And then the other type of pastor, the way of the dragon, the one that is leadership focused, the one that is focused on making a name for himself or even just dealing with his congregation in harsh ways, which is usually someone that is not shepherding, but somebody that is, as the point goes, The Way of the Dragon, someone that's kind of roaring over their church.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really struck me in this book is they use the example of G.I. Packer. And there's a moment in the book where they talk about going to a coffee shop with Packer and then walking outside. And they're walking slightly behind him. I think one of them is walking slightly behind. And they're saying it dawns on them just that Packer's just kind of quietly shuffling along. And you've just got this kind of older man who's lived many years serving the Lord and now he just looks frail and kind of older. And it dawned on them that this is one of the most caring individuals who has yet to complain about his situation in their time together, who needs a lot of compassion and care, but has not asked for it and just keeps serving. And when I was reading this book, it was in a season of my life where I would have said that I would have probably leaned more to The Way of the Dragon. I would probably have leaned more to the harshness of, we've got to get this job done. And reading this book really helped me realize that actually the softer, gentler, compassionate way of a shepherd caring for a lamb actually is far more effective, because that's actually how Christ served his people and continues to serve the will of the Father in that compassionate manner. So really recommend it. I would say it's one of those books that I found a little bit emotional as I was reading. And I would say this is a kind of a bedside book to read before you head to bed as a pastor, of just reminding yourself all those hurts and pains from pastoral ministry. Don't go to bed thinking, I need to lead my people. Go to bed thinking, I will wake and continue to shepherd my people. Yeah. The Way of the Dragon, The Way of the Lamb by Goggin and Strobel.
Good deal. I'll end with my recommendation of sort of the modern book on pastoral ministry. And I've got three that I think I would really recommend in terms of written the last, in some cases, I think 5 years, certainly within the last 10 years, contemporary books on pastoral ministry. And there's just so many books come out on pastoral ministry. But which three I think I would recommend as of late? The first is a book called The Care of Souls by Harold Sinkbeil. Mm-hmm. Just a fantastic book that looks at, just as you mentioned, shepherding. In particular, Harold, he grew up on a farm as a farm boy. So there's lots of illustrations about farm life and just the rhythms of that, the connection between sowing and reaping and harvesting and patience and reliance on the sovereignty of God for sunshine and rain and all these sorts of things. Connections between those sort of natural elements of agrarian lifestyle and the care, the patient, gentle care of pastoral ministry. The book is just really, really good. And I just revisited it a little bit recently for a book project of my own that Harold is editing the series that I'm contributing to. And so I went back to Care of Souls to kind of look at some things that I wanted to, you know, perhaps quote from. And just was reminded, like, man, it's just, it's just such a modern treasure and kind of overlooked. It won some awards, I think, when it came out. But, you know, the book cycle today is just so fast. And so I'm afraid people may overlook it, even though it's still pretty good.
It really is a fantastic book.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's The Care of Souls by Harold Sinkbeil. And then more recently, The Unwavering Pastor by Jonathan Dodson. Jonathan's a friend of mine. He's been a guest on the podcast before. That little book is really good just in the when you think about the modern context of ministry, particularly COVID, political division, et cetera, what it feels like and what it ought to look like to shepherd in this especially ultra-modern context in the West. Very divisive, sometimes hostile, just difficult ministry journey. Jonathan writes as a seasoned pastor, but as one who's encouraging the biblical stability, fidelity to the gospel, but also the stable emotionality of the pastor and an even keeledness and just a resiliency and endurance that I think is really helpful. So that's called The Unwavering Pastor. And then finally, a book by my friend Jeremy Reitbol called Pastor Jesus is Enough. Mm-hmm. And somewhat similar, it's a little broader in its scope than Dodson's book, but really going after the pastoral heart and reminding us over and over and over again in very pastoral ways of the sufficiency of Christ. That our sufficiency is not based on how ministry is going or how we feel even, but our sufficiency is in Christ alone. And so through that book, Jeremy does what I think the best pastoral ministry books do, which is pastor the pastor. Mm-hmm. So you're reading it and you feel shepherded. Yeah. It's not just here's the technology, here's the technique, or here's the theology download, but you're being shepherded as you read it. And so Pastor Jesus is Enough by Jeremy Reitbol would be my final recommendation.
My final one, again, coming from the PTC, is The Art of Pastoring, David Hansen. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things I really like about this book. Number one, I even just like the process he goes through. It is not the technique of pastoring. It is not the academic view of pastoring. It's the art of pastoring. Mm-hmm. It's not a one size fits all. You're going to be a little bit different how you approach it. But what he really is getting at is the mindset behind it, that we're all going to be roughly the same in terms of how we should approach it. But our outcomes might be a little bit different. Our techniques might be a little bit different. And I really love that what he's doing is he is painting a picture of the beauty of ministry rather than giving you the step-by-step process.
Yeah.
And there's one particular page I highlighted three different quotes. And I think putting the three together, it just really gives the sense of the book. So here's quote number one. Pastors are like football quarterbacks. They need to be able to take hard shots from their opponents and get up smiling. He then continues talking about the church. I look into eyes. I look into lives. I look for needs. I look for hard hearts that need to be softened and for tender hearts that need to be encouraged. And he continues, the fire is lit in my belly as I see what the congregation really is, lost people, and what I really have to bring, the life-giving word. And I just love how what he paints there is, church isn't easy. You're going to get hit. But we have to have a mentality to continue to serve in there and a mentality to see what's really going on, which is lost and hurt people that really need Jesus and his word. And he does that throughout the whole book. It's almost every chapter. There's just multiple quotes like that that just remind you what you're meant to be doing. And pastoring, I think there's so many books on it. And I, as you said, there's so many books about the techniques, but this book really gets to what is under the skin of that is what is pastoring. And it is really an art form. It's a, it's something that you're going to develop over time. And so I really recommend that, The Art of Pastoring, Ministry Without All the Answers by David Hansen.
It's such a good book. If I did a top 10, you know, personal top 10 of the ministry books that have helped me the most, that book would certainly be on there, probably even in the top five.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating is, I mean, Hansen, he's still around. He's only wrote like two or three books. And then, and you know, his last one was ages ago. I mean, I read this book, you know, probably 20 years ago, I guess. And it meant a lot to me then. And there's some similarity between him and like Eugene Peterson, very similar sort of.
I mean, Eugene
but
Peterson.
But they're both in Montana as well, or they were, you know.
Eugene Peterson says this actually on the book. This is the freshest and most honest book on pastoral work you've ever likely to come upon.
That's so, high praise from a man who writes books like that himself. That's good. You got anything else? I'm done. Okay. Best books for pastors.
Yeah.
If you've got a book budget, this would be a good place to start, maybe. Kind of come back to this episode. And until next time, dear listener, if you enjoy the podcast, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time. May Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.